In the previous Mishnah, we learned that although in general a item that is attached to the wall or is built into the wall, even though it is a useful item and perhaps it has all of the conditions in order for it to become tome, it can contain things, the fact that it is attached to the ground or it's attached to the wall which is attached to the ground means that it cannot become tome. Just like the ground itself cannot become tome, anything fixed to the ground cannot become tome. However, the previous Mishnah taught that if somebody had a kli that was not attached to the wall, so the kli could already become tome, and later on he then attached that kli to the wall. In such a case, since the item was already a kli and it had that status of something that could become tome, attaching it to the wall would not necessarily take away the ability for the item to become tome. But this is only the case for as long as we're able to see that kli as an individual, independent item which is not just totally nullified to the wall. And this Mishnah will bring another few examples of kelim which are attached to the wall, and when we are able to see it as a separate kli, in which case it would still be able to become tome, and in which cases it's considered to be nullified to the wall, and as such would not be able to become tome. Kofes, a thick wooden beam that was able to become tome via the transfer of tumah called tumas midras. As we've seen a number of times, this refers to when a zov, or somebody with a similar level of impurity, sits or lies down on something which is designated for supporting the weight of a person, then in such a case there's a unique law that the item itself will become an av hatumah. It will have a primary level of impurity instead of the regular lower level of a rishon letumah, one step removed from the primary level of impurity. Now for this thick wooden beam to be able to become tomei via tumas midras, it must be that there was some kind of seat carved into the wooden beam, which means that it's designated for sitting on. And later on, shekavoy banidbach, he fixed it on top of a stone wall as one of the rows of stones in the wall. The question is, are we able to still see this as an independent kli that can become tome, or do we just see it as part of the wall, in which case it would not be able to become tome? Kavoy, if he fixed it permanently onto the wall, but veloy bona olov, he didn't build any other rows of stones on top of it, which means that technically speaking, you're still able to sit on top of it if you sit at the top of the wall, and people would sometimes do that, and therefore we are still able to see it as an independent kli designated for sitting. Or if bona olov, he did build other rows of stones on top of it, but veloy kva'oi, he did not fix this kofes, this thick wooden beam, to be part of the wall. He attached it very loosely, and even the rows of stones that he built on top of it, he did in such a way that he would be able to remove this thick wooden beam later on, and there would be a sort of hole, a gap within the wall. So although right now he's obviously not able to sit on that thick wooden beam because there are other rows of stones on top of it, nevertheless, since he didn't permanently fix it there and he's intending to take it out again, so that allows it to retain its status as a separate kli, which is not just totally nullified to be part of the wall. And because of this, if a zov sits on top of the wall, even though he's not sitting directly on top of this thick wooden beam, since at the end of the day his weight is being supported partly by that beam as well, the beam would become tome, because we're still able to see it as an individual kli since it's bound to be taken out of the wall at some point. So even when it is part of the wall, it's not really fully part of the wall, so it can become tome even at that point. So in these cases, Mitch says that tome, it is still able to become tome via tumas midras. But kavoy ubon olov, if he fix it to the wall permanently, he's not intending on taking it out of the wall, and he built other rows of stones on top of it, so he's not going to use it as a seat either, so now it is totally part of the wall, and therefore tohar, it would no longer be able to become tome via the transfer of tumas midras, and the truth is it wouldn't be able to become tome at all, because it's made of wood and it can't contain anything, and it's not considered to be designated for supporting the weight of anybody. Second example of the Mishnah, mapitz, a mat which is designated for lying on, shenesone al gabi akiris, that somebody placed on top of the wooden beams that are part of the ceiling of this room. The way that they would construct the ceiling in many houses, if it would also be the floor of the next story above that, is that they would have these wooden beams, and on top of the wooden beams, they would have a layer of a mixture of small stones and plaster. But often, in between the plaster and these wooden beams, they would also put mats, possibly to prevent the plaster from dripping through the ceiling. And the Mishnah says that kva'oi v'loinas on olav samazeva, if he fixed the mats permanently to be part of the ceiling, however, he has not yet placed the plaster on top of the mats. So at this point, you're still able to lie on the mats. Noson olav samaziva, or if he did put a plaster on top of it, but veloy kavoi, he didn't permanently put the mats and fix them to that ceiling. He didn't nail them into the wooden beams. In such case, it's possible to just remove the mats from being part of the ceiling, and therefore it would not lose its status that it has had until now of a mat that one is able to lie on. It's true that currently you're not able to lie on it, because the plaster has been placed on it. However, it does not become totally nullified to the ceiling, since it's not permanently attached there, and it's easy to just remove it. So in these two cases, Tomei would still be able to become Tomei via the transfer of Trumas Midros, Kavoi Venosmas Vazeva. But if he permanently fixed the mats there, he nailed them into the wooden beams, and he smeared the plaster on top of it, then Tohar, it would no longer be able to become Tomei via Trumas Midros, because it's no longer an independent Kli that until now had that Trumas status. Rather, from this point onwards, it's nullified to being part of the ceiling, and it wouldn't be able to become Tomei at all. Third example of the Mishnah, Ka'ora Shekoa B'shidotei V'migdol, a bowl that somebody fixed to the inside of a chest or a box or a closet. And we're talking about such a large box or container that is able to hold at least 40 sa'ah. And as we learned in the previous parakim, that means that it's too large and too heavy to be able to be carried when it's full, and therefore it's not able to become tomei. And this person attached a kli, a bowl, to the inside of this massive box, kedera kabalosa, if he attached it in a way that it's still able to hold things in the regular way, the bowl was attached upright, then tomei, it's still able to become tomei, because until now it was a kli, and just by affixing it to something that is not able to become tomei does not take away its status of a kli. However, shalei kedera kabalosa, if he fixed it in such a way that it no longer would be able to contain things in its regular way, for example, he fixed it to the side of the inside of the box, so now it's on its side, the bowl, it can't hold things because it's not upright, then to Hoira, it would no longer be able to become Tomei, since its position makes it something which is totally secondary to the rest of the Kli, and we no longer see it as its original Kli because it's not standing in its regular, normal way. Mishnah Vov, the examples continue. Sodden Shu Tomei Midras, a sheet that is able to become Tomei via the transfer of Trumas Midras because one would lie down on it, and he turned it into a curtain by attaching it to a entrance to a particular place or to a doorway. Tohermina Midras, it can no longer become Tomei via Trumas Midras because now it's considered to be a curtain, not a sheet that one lies down on. Avol, however, Tomei Tomei Mace, it can become Tomei via the impurity which comes from a dead body or other kinds of impurity, because a sheet is considered to be like an item of clothing which can become Tomei even without being able to contain things. And the reason for this is because a person who would be on guard next to a curtain, if he ever got cold, he would wrap himself in the curtain. And therefore, to some degree, we're able to look at it and define it as an item of clothing, and therefore it can become Tomei. Now, the truth is, it's not so simple. We learned just now in the previous couple of Mishnayos that if something was until now a Kli, then even if you attach it to something else, it still retains its original status. So why is it that as if you make the sheet into a curtain, it no longer is able to become Tomei by Trumas Midras? The answer is because the person actually, we're talking about a situation where he did a particular action to alter and adapt this sheet for it to be able to be used as a curtain. So he's showing that this is now a curtain and it's not what it originally was, because he's physically changing the item. The question is, how much does he have to do to physically change that item? From what point would it no longer be able to become Tomei as Trumas Midras? Because we view it as a new item, as a curtain only. From when it breaks, literally, that means that it is slightly torn and cut a bit for it to be in the exact shape that a curtain needs to be. It's enough just to connect it to the loops which are going to be used to hang the curtain, even if you haven't yet cut it up. Rabbi Akiva says, Mishay Koveya, even if you only just fix the curtain to the doorway where it's going to stand, and you don't actually adapt it in any other way, according to Rabbi Akiva, that would be a sufficient change to the item, that it's already clear and evident that it is only a curtain, and it loses its previous status as a sheet, because it's clearly being used for a totally different purpose now. Mishnah Zayin, the final Mishnah of this Perek, talks about a mat, and as the diagram can show, the way that the mat was made is that a kind of soft material, for example, soft reeds, were woven together. However, in order to strengthen the structure of the mat, there would also be a number of harder reeds, and this is the long sticks, which the diagram shows going from the top to the bottom of this mat, essentially widthways, whereas the softer reeds that were that made up the main part of the mat, they went lengthways, and they needed to be tied at the end, as the diagram shows on the right. They needed to be tied into very strong knots in order to prevent the weaving from unraveling. And the truth is, it's because the softer reeds went lengthways that these harder reeds would generally be placed widthways in the other direction, because it was far simpler to just put those harder reeds through and in between the softer reeds, and also on the other end as the most left stick, which is over there. This was the simplest way of making the reeds, and because of that, people would sleep on these mats along the width of these mats in between the harder sticks which were used to strengthen the mats. Because if you would sleep in the other direction, then it would be very uncomfortable. He'd be on top of these much harder sticks. That having been said, the second diagram shows a mat that was made with the harder sticks also going along the length of the mat. But as is quite evident, this was a much more complicated way of making the mat. And if somebody did make it like that, it sort of indicates that he's not using it for the regular purpose of sleeping on it. Rather, mats also had a different purpose, and that was being used as roofs for shade. And the Mishnah says, "Machatzeles she'osel konel arka," a mat whose harder sticks were made going along the length of the mat, tahira, it cannot become tome via the transfer of tumas medras, because it's not considered to be designated for lying on. Rather, it would be used as shade, as a roof to provide shade. However, the chacham say that actually it can become tome via tumas medras, because it is possible to lie down there in a very similar way to a regular mat. It's true that the way he made it indicates perhaps that it's not what he intends on using it for, but it's very much possible to use it for that, and at the moment it's not yet been placed on top of a roof. One is able to lie on it, and therefore it can become tomei vai tumas midras, in which case do the chachom agree that it would not be able to become tomei vai tumas midras. Achiasa kamin ki, if he makes these harder sticks not going straight along lengthways along the mat, but rather in the shape of the Greek letter ki, which is similar to the letter U. If that's how he shapes it on the mat, so then wherever you lie down on the mat, you'd end up having part of your body going over these hard sticks, and that would be very uncomfortable. So in that case, there's actually something which is part of the mat which is preventing you from lying down on it. In that case, the Chachom agree that it's not considered to be a mat for lying down on, and therefore it would not be able to become tomei via tumas midras. Next case, Asal Merochba, if he made these harder sticks going along the width of the mat, that's the regular way, but Ve'ein Ben Konel L'Chaver Arba Tfochim, there is less than 4 tfochim distance between each of the sticks. A person, when lying down, takes up a space on average of 4 tfochim. That's how much width he takes up. So if the sticks are closer than that, then once again he would end up sleeping partly on these sticks, and it would be very uncomfortable, and it wouldn't be considered fit for lying down on. So if they are very close together, then tohar, he would not be able to become tomei tumas medras. Nech l'kol rochba. What happens if the entire mat splits into two in its widthways, as the next diagram shows? This is going to cause the softer reeds, the main part of the mat, to now unravel, because there's no longer a knot at the end. So even if it hasn't yet unraveled, it's not fit to last at all, and therefore it's already considered to be very much a broken kli, which cannot become tomei. Rabbi Yehuda therefore says that it cannot become tomei. V'chein amati roshei ama adanim, and the same applies if somebody unties the knots which are at the end of a mat. Tahira, it would no longer be able to become tomei, because it's considered to be broken. What happens if nech l'kol orka, the entire mat breaks along its length? So that means that the sticks also broke in half, and you now have these two long mats, which are they have an even smaller width. The question is, how narrow can each of the mats be in order to still be fit for lying down on? Remember, they would lie down widthways along the in the parts in between the sticks. The Mishnah says, "V'nishtar bo shloisha ma'adanim." If there is enough of the width of the mats which remains, such that there are still 3 knots attached at the end, and that essentially means shishat tfochim, that there still remains a width of 6 tefachim, tamei would still be able to become tamei via tumas medras, because 6 tefachim is enough for the mat to be considered useful for somebody to lie down on it. Even though obviously the height of a person is much more than 6 tefachim, the main part of his body, excluding his legs and his head, takes up 6 tefachim, and that's the main part of the body which requires a mat to lie down on. If somebody has a mat which allows him to lie that part of his body on, he will still use the mat for lying down on, and therefore it still has a use for lying down on. So it can become tomei via tumas medras. Machatzelas imasam kabelis tuma. The Mishnah ends off by asking, from what point can a mat become tomei? From what point is its process considered to be completed? Is it considered to be fully formed? Mishete konev. Once the ends and the sharp parts which come out of the reeds have been cut off, v'higma melachton, that is considered to be the final stage in the procedure of forming the mat. And until you've done that, it's not really fit for lying down on, because there are sharp bits across the mat that would prevent somebody from lying down on it.
The first Mishnah talks about the different parts of a weaving machine, and this can be shown in the two diagrams for this Mishnah. And the truth is, the diagrams look more scary than it actually is to explain how the procedure worked. Weaving essentially involves two different kinds of threads which are going in opposite directions. The warp threads, which in Hebrew is shasi, those threads stay in the same position pretty much, and the erev thread, which is called weft in English, the weft thread, that's essentially one long thread which would be woven in between each of the warp threads. So it would go over one of them and underneath the next one, over the next one, underneath the next one. And when you reach the end of all of the shasi threads, the warp threads, then you would take the erev back again in the opposite direction, and over one, underneath the next one, over the next one, underneath the next one, etc. So essentially all of the work is done with the erev thread. The chassis, the warp threads, would remain in the same position, and the erev thread would usually just be one ball of thread which was taken across the warp threads over and under, over and under. The main idea of the weaving machine is, in order to speed up the process, they would have every other warp thread, every other chassis thread, which are the ones which remained in the same position, they would be attached, or they would go through a hole which was part of a frame that could be lifted upwards and downwards, and all of the other warp chassis threads would be attached to a different frame. They would go through a hole in a different frame. And then, by using pedals, one could just lift up each of the frame one after the other. You lift up one frame, and that causes every other warp thread to be lifted up, and then you're able to just pass the weft thread, the erev, across all of the warp threads in one go, and then you would lift up the other frame and lower down that frame, and this way you are causing all of the other warp threads to go upwards slightly, and you can bring back the erev thread, the weft thread, across going in the other direction, and that way, very quickly, you are able to do this process. Instead of taking the erev thread over one, and then underneath the next one, over, under, which would be a very tedious process, you can lift up every other warp thread all in one go via this weaving machine and take across the erev thread all in one go, and that would just speed up the process to an extreme degree. There was one more part of the weaving machine called the keros, and in the diagram, the person who is controlling the weaving machine is actually holding on to this part, and this had comb-like protrusions that went in between all of the warp threads. And after he would part, the person controlling the machine would pass the erev, the weft thread, across all of the warp threads. Again, he would lift up every other warp thread via the frame, which he would control with each of the pedals. But then the erev thread, it would have been passed through, but it would be pretty loose. He would use this keros, which is very similar to a large comb, in order to tighten that erev thread and make it part of the material that has already been woven. The part of the material which is closest to the person in the diagram is the part which has already been woven. On the other side of this machine is another roller which has the threads, the warp threads, which have not yet been woven. The Mishnah says, and again, Kibbutz Elyon, one who touches the upper roller, that refers to the roller which is right next to the person around which the already woven material is wound, b'kovod hatachtoin, or if he touches the lower roller, that refers to the roller which is further away from the person, around which the thread which has not yet been woven is wound. Banirim, this refers to the strings which are part of the two frames that are used for raising the warp threads. They had a hole in the middle in order that the warp threads can go through the hole. But he has made these strings, that is the nirim. Uvakeiros, or the keiros, which is the comb-like part of this machine towards the front of the machine. Again, that's used for tightening the erev thread, the weft thread, once it has been taken across all of the warp threads in one direction. Uvachud shehavir al gabei argamon, and a thread that somebody passed over purple thread. Purple thread was much more expensive than most other kinds of thread, and in order that it wouldn't get so dirty, he would usually cover it with another thread. Later on, however, he would take out that thread. So it wasn't considered to be a real part of the purple thread. Uve'irosh enos lachzira, a piece of colored material that he would sometimes combine to the woven material, but which he is not planning on actually keeping as a part of the woven material. Over here, enos lachzira means that he is not planning on keeping it as a part of the material. All of these items are not considered to be an extension and part of the woven material, part of the woven thread, and therefore, if the woven thread becomes tomei, the rest of it won't be considered an extension of the same item, it won't be tomei, and therefore, if somebody touches one of those parts, tohar, he will remain pure. On the other hand, benefesh ha-maseches, which literally means the soul of that which is being woven, the idea is that a soul is inside of a person, and so too we're talking about the erev thread, the weft thread, which is in between all of the warp threads. It's the part which hasn't yet been made part of the woven material via the keros, the comb-like part which would tighten it, but it has already been placed through the warp threads. Even though it hasn't yet been tightened, it is considered to be an extension of the woven material. And the warp threads which are currently in between the two rollers, so we're not talking about the warp threads which are still wound around the roller at the back, but the ones which have been rolled outwards and are sort of being worked on now, even though no weft thread has yet been passed through them, or a double thread which is passed over and covers a purple thread in order to protect it from getting dirty. Here it's a real cover that becomes part of the purple thread. And a small part of the material which is covered, which he adds to part of the woven material and plans on keeping it as a part of the material. All of these parts are considered to be an extension and part of the woven material. So if the woven material touched a dead body and therefore it became an av hatumas, a primary level of impurity, these parts would also gain that level of impurity such that if a person touched those parts, he would become tomei. The rest of the Mishnah talks about the different parts and tools which are involved in the process of spinning thread, spinning wool into thread. The imah is a rod around which the unspun wool is wound, and the end of the thread was attached to the hook at the top of what is called a kush, essentially another small stick, and there was a pika, which was a weight attached to this stick, which would make sure that the thread would be tight as it was being spun by weighing down on it. Says the Mishnah, Hanegeh batzemesh alo imah, if somebody touches the wool which is wound around the imah, the rod, bashvoya, or if it's wound around a triangular imah, tohar, he would be pure. That is to say, the wool is not considered to be an extension of the rod itself. Hanegeh bapika, one who touches the weight which is attached to the other stick, which had a hook at the top, and was the tool that actually did the spinning of the wool, and the wool was spun around that stick, actually per'ah, as long as he hasn't removed the spun thread from that stick, tomei, the weight would also be tomei together with the rest of the stick, and the person who touches that would also become tomei even if the source of impurity only touched the stick, because the weight assists in that function, so as long as the wool is being spun and the thread is wrapped around there, so it's considered to just be an extension of the stick, however Mishnah per'ah. Once he removes the thread from the stick, then the weight is no longer considered to be an extension of the stick, Because usually the weight would just be taken off of the stick when it wasn't being used. And therefore, in a case where the source of impurity touched the stick, and it didn't touch the weight, and right now the thread is not wound around the stick, at that point the weight is no longer considered to be an extension of the stick itself. So if somebody touches only the weight, tohar, he will remain pure and not become tomei.